Welcome back, Joe Torti Show, 97.5. The Fanatic, hanging out with you until midnight. Tyler Zuli's producing. Looking here at the lines for the games, and obviously Tyler pointed out that the Saturday games are a factor now. And NFL.com has them listed at the end, which is super strange. This isn't next week, right? No, that's this week. So they have them listed Sunday.
No, there's three games this Saturday.
So they have them all listed Sunday, then the Monday night game, and then three Saturday games after that. Super bizarre.
Well, it's kind of like, you know what's always been weird to me is how they list when they talk about the bowl games, where they list them in chronological order, which I guess makes sense from a standpoint of viewing them from what days they're being played.
Right.
But to me, when you look at the bowl games, the two that are most important are the semifinal games.
Exactly.
They should be up top every time. And then everything else.
Yeah. Some big games there for sure. Biggest game by far. It might be the biggest game of the weekend outside of Dallas and Philadelphia. But I think that historically this is a bigger game. Buffalo at New England. 10-4 at 11-3. Serious question, Tyler, and I don't mean to tip the dreaded pick segment coming up on This Week in Pro Football on Saturday. I'm starting to get the feeling that the New England thing could be done in the AFC East if Buffalo continues what they're doing
here. Yeah, and we talked about that this Saturday with one of the overreactions being, is the New England torch passed? Now, if there are two things that I've been extremely constant with this entire season. The Bengals stink. And the Bills are really good.
Yes, you
so
have been.
You can tip, you could not. You know what way I'm leaning in that game.
I'm saying, like, for the division. So what's New England have to do the rest of the way here? I'm looking at that game. I'm thinking, wow, that could go a long way towards determining things. Because not for nothing, and people forget about this. Buffalo had them. They absolutely had him, and Josh Allen doesn't finish the game. If Josh Allen finishes the game, then who knows what happens? The Patriots wrap up with a home game against the Dolphins. Okay, and the Bills, who are a game behind the Patriots, host the Jets. That's probably about a wash, right? Hosting the Dolphins and hosting the Jets, neither of those teams have anything to play for, regardless of their talent.
Right, and they both played better later in the season than they did in the beginning.
Exactly.
So I think you're playing the same team.
It's about a wash. I don't know what the tiebreaker scenarios are. I would assume that the Bills have some, especially considering the fact that they beat Baltimore, or that Baltimore beat New England, rather, and a couple other things. If the Bills beat the Patriots, I think that they've got a pretty good shot here at the AFC crown. And why am I making such a big deal out of this? Because I literally can't remember the last time the Patriots didn't win the AFC East.
So the Patriots are 4-0 in the division.
Oh,
the Bills are 3-1 with the loss to New England.
Okay, so you can even that up.
Both teams 7-3 in the conference.
Okay.
The Bills would then go to 8-3. The Patriots would drop to 7-4.
So that's the next tiebreaker, right?
I believe so. I believe that's how it works.
Hmm. Because I think if the, and obviously then the last games matter, but there's the one scenario where the Bills pass the Patriots. They get, interesting.
The Bills could be as high as the 2 seed.
Well, because this might not be accurate because I've seen websites like this be inaccurate before. Patriots Wire says that the Bills also need the Patriots to lose out because of the common foe tiebreaker. Is common opponent the... Huh. Let me see what the tiebreakers are for this.
Okay, so here's what NFL.com has laid out.
Okay.
New England clinches the division with a win or a tie.
Okay.
Obvious, they're up one game.
Yep.
Then in terms of the playoff standings, nope, and now it froze. All right, I'll get back to you in a minute.
All right.
Yeah, I know that was anticlimactic. I'm sorry.
See, it's so simple with the Eagles. Eagles win, they still play. Dallas loses or the Eagles win, they're in. Eagles lose, they're out. Pretty simple. I wonder if something similar is cooking with the Bills, even though they are a game behind the Patriots.
Okay, I've got it for you now.
All right, I'm ready.
So the Patriots, again, win the division with a win or a tie. The Patriots cannot clinch the one seed it cannot clinch the one seed this week.
Okay.
The Patriots
need Baltimore to lose out.
Can clinch the two seed this week with a win and a Chiefs loss.
Okay, got it.
So they can clinch the two seed that way. They would be the three seed if they win and the Chiefs win. They wouldn't be the two seed yet. It's not that right. They would be the three seed.
Got it.
The only way they could be the five seed is if they lose out.
Right. So that's exactly it. Because the fourth tiebreaker is conference games. The third is common opponents, which I thought it was flipped for some reason. But we got to the end of it. There we go. See, I've only been paying attention to what the Eagles have to do. I wasn't ready to go on that deep dive. I'm just rooting so hard for somebody besides New England to win the AFC East so that it's like kind of the beginning of the end situation.
Joe, when you have a Tyler Zulli produced show, you always have to be ready to circle the wagons.
Yeah, well, I mean, that was more of like an oval or like you know, some kind of rhombus situation.
Yeah, we did not do this in a perfect circle.
Not
that's
a circle.
For sure.
Yeah, that's definitely not what we did. 610-632-0975, your phone number to join the conversation. Reach out on Twitter as well to Joe and Tyler at Joe Torti, at Tyler Zulli, and also at 97.5 The Fanatic. Other interesting games this weekend. Cowboys, 1.5-point favorite on the road against Philadelphia. Kind of an interesting line there. When I saw it, I thought that it was a surprise that the Cowboys were favored at all on the road. I thought that it might be an Eagles -2 type situation. Then I thought about the way that the Eagles won their last two games and who the Cowboys just beat in the LA Rams. So that could make a significant difference there. And then a big time game, the Packers at the Vikings. Vikings are a 5.5-point favorite in that game. And I know that I said that there are several games of the week here. Packers-Vikings is a really good one. This is what you get when you're the NFL and you stack all of the division games at the end of teams' schedules.
This is how it should be.
Yeah, I agree. I could not agree with you more.
You know, I got to tell you, too, it was a team that I was wrong on all year, and I think I have to apologize. There's a good game going on in Tennessee between the Titans and the Texans this week.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Wait, no. No, no, no. Titans and the Saints, right?
Yes, I'm sorry. Titans and the Saints. I apologize. You're correct. Yes.
But also a good game.
Right? Yes, still a good game. It's a merit game for the Titans.
A merit game in what way?
In terms of this is probably the best team they've played all year.
Mm-hmm. I'll buy that.
You see how they stack up against a good Saints team who has a ton to play for still, especially after the way they played against the Colts, blew the doors off of them. And then, but the week prior, losing to the 49ers.
And you're looking at a Saints team, by the way, that is trying to get home field throughout. That's what they're playing for at this point at 11-3. Then, of course, you've got the other ugly side of division games being stacked at the end of the season when you've got the Giants and Washington in a battle of 3-11 teams. Jacksonville and Atlanta, which is actually a sneaky decent game considering the fact that Atlanta has woken up and decided to start playing football, just as Jacksonville has remembered that they don't want to play football anymore. I don't know. I mean, there are some great games here, but no one's watching Detroit and Denver. I can promise you that. Like that, though, there's a lot of those kind of games as well. Good thing that
they may get flexed
from.
Out of Denver. We're gonna put Heidi on.
Yeah, the Heidi game. There you go. Reaching out on Twitter has been interesting so far tonight. People tweeting me about the Rise of Skywalker as well in response to my Star Wars tweet. Yeah. No. All right.
Oh no, I'm in. I don't. If you spoil this, not you personally.
I would never do it to you.
If someone spoils this movie for me.
What's the worst thing you've ever had spoiled for yourself?
Oh, that's a good question. Let me think about that. I'll get back to you.
Chew on that. Because
that's a tough question. I mean, it's got to be a movie of some kind.
I had Fight Club ruined for me, which was a disaster.
Yeah, because that's one of those movies where you can watch it again, but it's really only important the first time.
Well, and you watch it again the second time to catch all the things that you missed the first time.
Right.
So it's a cool experience. I had the first time robbed from me. Like, I had the first experience. Like, I started at that second viewing where you're looking for all of the things. And that was pre what you'd call viral internet age. So that meant that somebody had to maliciously spoil Fight Club for me. That's probably the worst one.
That hurts.
Yeah,
I know there was a point, and I'll check in with my brother, because this is kind of the things that he remembers.
Uh-huh.
There was a video game that I had spoiled, a kind of a twist ending.
Oh, really?
That I got spoiled for him.
Oh, man.
That I was not thrilled about.
By him? Did he do it?
I think so.
Oh, and that's a savage move.
And the problem is, it's not one of those games that you play, you know, kind of here and there. It's one of those games where you lock in, you get invested, you play 25 hours of gameplay. It was one of those games.
Oh, man. So here's the ethical and procedural question that a lot of people face here, because they're excited to talk about the movie and stuff like that. If it's a TV show, if it's a movie, what is the appropriate amount of time that has to pass before you can start talking about it?
I think from a personal standpoint, like me to you, you to your wife, me to my brother, it's unlimited.
Unlimited.
Until I see the movie, or I give you a, I'm not going to see it.
Okay, so
that's not going to work on Twitter.
Okay, so how about generic, here's my rule, right, for this movie, okay? This movie's a big movie, this Star Wars movie. And I feel like the kind of people that want to see Star Wars are not going to wait a month to see Star Wars. I think that it's unlikely.
Yeah, I would say 2 weeks.
You say 2 weeks. I would say one. I would say one full week after it is released. But 2 weeks, I could be convinced for that.
And the only reason I say two and not one is because that first week, the movie theaters are mobbed.
Yes.
It's difficult to get a ticket.
Yes.
Sometimes the movies that you go to see on like a Tuesday morning, because we work odd hours, you can get for $5.
True.
They don't start running those until the second week.
Right, right, right. Okay, that's fair. And then for TV shows, I give that 2 weeks. If you're 2 weeks behind on a TV show, that's your problem. That you're trying to keep up with.
You're talking about a show that runs once a week.
Yeah, that's currently airing. Fair. Now, it's different if you've never seen the show before and you're binging, and I just tell you that is malicious and evil. But if the show's on and it's ongoing, you have a 2 week period of grace.
Well, and so for an example like that, one that I had to catch up on because I was young. When it aired, and I probably wasn't allowed to watch it, was The Sopranos.
Okay, sure.
By the time I got to the end, I knew what the end was.
Right.
But it had been so long, it was just something that I knew was going to happen. If it was a recent thing, it's a different story.
Okay. All right. Well, there are etiquettes here, for sure. There are things, I guess there is etiquette here. There are things that we need to account for when it comes to spoiling and stuff like that. But it is something that I am proud to say I've never done. Unlike LaShawn McCoy, the worst person on the planet, who minutes after the Infinity War premiere puts everything out there into the universe. I really like LaShawn McCoy as a fantasy back and as an Eagles legend, but there are some things that are unforgivable. And that's one of them. Unlike Aguilar. 610-632-0975. Your phone number to join the conversation. Dak says he's good to go Sunday.
Of course he is.
Hasn't been in practice the last 2 days. What do you think of this? What do we make of it? I think that if you've got a sprained shoulder and then you're asked to forget throwing, take hits on the shoulder now. That might be a big ask, considering the fact that the Eagles' defensive line hasn't hit anybody all year. But if they start to, this is not the game for Dak Prescott to be in.
I'm curious, and this is some kind of wacky, bizarro way of thinking. I wonder if Dak Prescott and the team have kind of come to this agreement where you go out there, if you can't go, then we can say you tried, and the injury may forgive any divisional loss.
Wow.
Is that crazy or does that make any sense whatsoever?
Well, I'm trying to think here, right? I remember, was it Carson Palmer broke his left hand or something like that in a game? And the Bengals had him still out there and he was like handing the ball off backhanded the other way and stuff like that. So that wasn't necessarily like a trying to save face situation. It was, we'll take whatever we can out of you versus whoever we've got to put in behind you. I don't know how much of it goes into like, hey, we're trying to explain away whatever would happen here. But you do get the feeling, to your point, you get the feeling that there are big time consequences in the event that the Dallas Cowboys lose this game.
Oh, for sure. And
big time.
Going back to your last point, I wonder how many Chicago Bears fans there are that looked at Jay Cutler and went, you chickened your way out of the game.
Yes.
In the NFC title game, and Caleb Haney had to come in and play.
Right.
So I wonder if Dak and the Cowboys look at this and say, we don't need that situation.
Well, you cannot have Cooper Rush playing against the Philadelphia Eagles for the division.
No. But, I mean, Kyle Orton did it a couple years ago.
Yep.
Didn't go well.
Can't do it. Cannot do it. And not only that, it's kind of indefensible on the medical staff as well, where it's like, hey, how come the MRI waited until Wednesday? And the simple answer to me, by the way, when people were like, oh, why did the MRI happen on Wednesday? Like, it was probably swollen. He was probably all kinds of messed up on Monday and Tuesday. And Wednesday was probably the earliest that, you know, they could get an accurate reading on whatever's going on. A shoulder's not the same as like a knee or anything else. It's a weird, complex joint. It's the most mobile joint that you have in your body. Like, that is something that if there's swelling or issues that go with it, issues will arise with reading the MRI and things like that. If you've ever had a shoulder injury, you know how complex that area is. So that's why the MRI waited until Wednesday. The question is, what specifically happened during the game to cause that injury? And to hear Amari Cooper talking about it, what he overheard Michael Gallup, right? With Dak Prescott telling Michael Gallup, hey, on these run pass options, there's no way that I'm pulling it out and passing. Like, that tells you that it's not just like a little tweaked injury. That tells you that there's something up with Dak.
Well, and that's the thing, too. When you look at the guy say, or when you hear the guy say, I'm not going to throw the ball in the RPO, to me, that is only the only reason that you're still calling those plays is because something is being called at the line. And for the defense's adjustment, they still see, quote, RPO, even though you know it's a run play. So if he can't throw in the RPO, and a week may heal it, or the next 2 days may heal it, if he can't throw in the RPO, he can't throw.
That's it. Yeah, I was going to say, that's not just an RPO-specific
thing. Right, it's not just that play.
Man, oh man. It's going to be some good times, I think, coming out here on Sunday. I don't know for sure which way it's going to go. This is going to be a hotly contested game. I have to admit, I don't agree with our previous caller who said that this game's going to be a blowout. Because, I know that Dallas is a talented team. They're not any good.
I think you're going to see if one team, a certain team wins, it may be a blowout. If the other team wins, I think it may be close.
Oh, really? Okay.
Yes.
All right. We'll keep an eye out for that. Certainly. And the other part of it is that the Eagles, we talked about all the ramifications, what this means for the Cowboys. I do wonder how this is received in the event that the Eagles lose and Dallas wins the division, repeats in the division both years after the Eagles won the Super Bowl. You have so many built-in excuses, right? And valid, legitimate excuses. Team construction aside, when you have DeSean Jackson get injured, now Sean Jeffrey and everybody else he had get injured, your big free agent acquisition, your biggest one was Malik Jackson. You got, what, like 25 real-time minutes of him? Like, there are all kinds of built-in excuses. But you do wonder if a season like this, following a season like last year's, does kind of shorten the rope a little bit for anybody in Philadelphia. Because, look, maybe I'm foolish. Maybe I'm just silly. But I listen. When people say stuff, I listen. So when they're talking about spending stupid money, the Philadelphia Phillies, I'm like, great. Be stupid. Go and spend the stupid money. And when that doesn't happen, I say, huh. When I hear about this is our new norm, and we hear people within the organization talking about becoming a new dynasty and becoming the Patriots, I listen. And when that doesn't happen, because I've got to admit, the last couple seasons just look like generic standard Eagles pre-Super Bowl seasons to me. Lots of expectations, not a lot of execution. And you just say, yeah, they've got some good pieces. They'll add to it. We'll give it another try next year. I wonder at what point that like check comes due where it's like, hey, what happened to this new norm stuff? What happened to this heart of a champion stuff? What happened to this immortalized in statue form forever stuff? How can we lose the division twice in a row? If this is the new norm, the new norm stinks. I do wonder what happens there. I don't think that there will be broad, sweeping action. You might see coordinators get canned. For the record, I think regardless of what happens, you're probably going to see at least one and maybe two coordinators get canned at the end of the season. You just can't do what you've done offensively if you're the Eagles. Doug Peterson's the head coach. Head coach is not going to get fired. Somebody has to. Then you just keep it moving. But I do wonder if the big-time heat starts to turn up in the event that the Eagles go from winning the Super Bowl to winning one playoff game to being out of the playoffs. It seems like the team would be trending in the wrong direction that way. 610-632-0975 is your phone number. Top aboard this conversation. Joe Torti taking you up until midnight. It is the Joe Torti Show, right here on 97.5 The Fanatic.
Joe Torti on 97.5 The Fanatic.
Hey guys, it is Joe Torti. Thousands of you have joined me and set up accounts to bet online with my guys at Parks Casino Sportsbook, the number one casino in all of Pennsylvania. The home team right here in the Delaware Valley. Let's talk about future bets. This is when you can bet on things like who will win the NFC and the AFC, who will have the most passing yards, most receiving yards, and rushing yards for the entire season. For the NFC, a $100 bet on San Fran to win the NFC wins you $300. A $100 bet on New Orleans to win the NFC gets you $240. A $100 bet on the Birds to win the NFC wins $1,000. In the AFC, a $100 bet on Baltimore or Kansas City to win the AFC wins you $450. Or you can bet on most regular season passing yards. A $100 bet on Carson Wentz wins $15,000. So many sports to bet. So much fun. Spreads, props, parlays, teasers. Download the app now or go to parkscasino.com/PA. Use promo code GREEN and get your first risk-free bet of $500. Your risk-free bet refunded as account credit. Bet with the best. Parks Casino and Sportsbook, online or in person. Must be 21. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER.
97.5 The Fanatic.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. It's going to be a busy year for country superstar Jason Aldean. He's extended his Highway Desperado tour and is teaming up with Kid Rock for Rock the Country tour dates. We've ranked our top five Jason Aldean music videos. Text Jason to 45911 to see if your favorite made the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Jason to 45911 and we'll send the link straight to your phone.
97.5 The Fanatic.
Welcome back, Joe Torti Show. 97.5 The Fanatic. Tyler Zulli's producing tonight's program as we kind of jumped around to a lot of different areas here. It's good. There's a lot of stuff to talk about. Obviously, with the Flyers winning 6-1, I was psyched to look at my fantasy hockey team and realize that in a 6-1 victory, Claude Giroux had 0 points. But overall, you know, whatever. It happens. Happens, I guess. But then I saw this, and I'm trying to pull it up on The Athletic. They do it every single year. The 2019-2020 goalie tiers. Tier 6 of the goalie tiers. And here's how it works. They ask a panel of NHL GMs, assistant GMs, head coaches, and goalie coaches to rate every starting goalie on a 1 to 5. And then they're given anonymity. And then they lay out who the best goalies are, right? So, naturally, the question is, where is our friend Carter Hart, right? So, you go down and you're seeing all these goalies, all these good goalies, and Carter Hart is down at tier 3. So, the goalies in front of him in this tier: Henrik Lundqvist, Devan Dubnyk, Jonathan Quick, Semyon Varlamov, Antti Raanta, and then Carter Hart. So, this is what they said about Hart. The first time Carter Hart has been evaluated in goalie tiers, panelists were admittedly very conservative in their rating. They were impressed with the rookie season turned in by 21-year-old Hart, but also cognizant that it takes more than 31 games to evaluate a young goalie. This is obviously true. There's potential here, but it still remains potential until he gets more experience. Too early to tell, but I think he's pretty good, said a GM, echoing the thoughts of his colleagues. I like him, said another GM. He's going to be really good. But ultimately, he's still unproven, which kept most of the ratings in the 2 to 4 range. And this is what I've always thought. This is like, this quote could have been taken from me. So buckle up, goalie coaches in the NHL. I'm coming for you. He's young. He's a little bit on the smaller side. He's not that 6'3 or 6'4 goalie that covers more net, said a goalie coach. He's extremely skilled. He has a really bright future. They didn't have a great team last year. There will be more growing pains and guys get more of a read on a guy. He does have a bright future. I just don't know if he's going to jump right into the Vezina Trophy conversation. All of those things are completely fair, right? Here's the thing about the Flyers. The Flyers typically, over the course of their history, have had a team that is good enough that they don't need a Vezina Trophy caliber goalie. They need somebody there who is, like, you know, above replacement level. They need somebody who's pretty good. And Carter Hart certainly has the ability to do that. I think his career would be a ridiculous disappointment if he didn't end up at least pretty good. I don't know if you need him to be in that Vezina Trophy conversation. Like Jonathan Quick, right? The Los Angeles Kings were never, ever, ever going to win anything unless Jonathan Quick was perfect, right? The number of games that Jonathan Quick lost 1-0 had to just infuriate him. I don't think that's ever going to be the case with the Flyers. Certainly not the way that Alain Vigneault has this team playing and the way that he's coaching them and the talent that they've collected. I don't know if you need Carter Hart to be a Vezina Trophy winner.
Well, and it's kind of funny, too, that you look at that list, and what the things that came to my mind when you were rattling off the names were guys that are still good that are probably future Hall of Famers but are on the downturn of their career, or guys that I don't know at this point in their careers, like Dubnyk, that I would take over a 22-year-old Carter Hart.
Sure. That's exactly it. Well, so you think about a guy like Lundqvist, right? People probably aren't going to want to hear this because, I mean, admittedly, I grew up a big Patrick Waugh fan, and I know that there are Brodeur fans and things like that. Henrik Lundqvist might be the best goalie ever. Like, he might be somebody who literally was, as a prospect, as a player, just, he might have been the perfect goalie guy to have on your team. At 37 years old, he's in the same tier as Carter Hart is. Now, like you said, he slipped a little bit. Jonathan Quick has certainly slipped too. But, I mean, Varlamov is close to the top of his game at this point. Like you said, Dubnyk, I probably wouldn't take Dubnyk over Hart. And then Raanta, he doesn't even 100% have his net. So I'd take Hart over most of these guys.
Well, and isn't Raanta the kind of guy that you look at and it was small sample size, really good run, and that parlayed him to a starting gig?
Yeah.
Because, I mean, when he filled in for Lundqvist, he was sensational.
That's, yep. And then you know, before that, it was with Chicago, right? I mean, it's the less you see of a guy sometimes, the better. That's why, like, Devin Dubnyk played 67 games last year. And, like, the more that he played, kind of the worse it got. He had the lowest save percentage that he had since joining the Wild. So, understandable that people would want to see more of Carter Hart. Because there are other goalies, right? Like Matt Murray's a perfect example in Pittsburgh of a dude who looked just like otherworldly. And then he's asked to shoulder more of the load. They get rid of Marc-Andre Fleury. You're not the split guy anymore. You're the number one guy. And, you know, you have not looked as good as you did in that small sample size.
Right. And I think that there's a guy currently, and I know that he's had some experience, but Darcy Kemper in Arizona is starting to trend that way too.
Yes.
Where you're starting to see a couple of cracks in the armor as he gets more and more starts.
Well, that's why they have Ranta. They're just splitting them because neither of those guys are going to be able to take control of that net. In the same way that, like, Andre Vasilevsky might take like 10 games off this year or something like that because of how good he is. And he's won games by himself for a team that literally doesn't need him to because they're so good offensively. It's crazy. But anyway, that's where Carter Hart is. He's the third tier, according to The Athletic. Not bad for your first ranking. He'll be higher in his second ranking.
At 22.
Yeah, at 22. He'll be higher in his second ranking. That's for sure. I think a lot of those other guys might be their last time, last year in the tier where they are. And if they continue to play, keep sliding down a little bit. Speaking of sliding down, the Sixers, I don't know if we mismanaged expectations or if, like, for some people, I'm sure, Tyler, that they're right on target, but they weren't sure that the rest of the Eastern Conference was going to be the way that it has been. Like, I, for one, thought that Toronto would be worse off than they are. Miami, I did not anticipate putting together the season that they've put together so far. And then obviously Boston's held on longer than I thought they would too. So all in all, I mean, you're looking at a Sixers team that has not been bad. But Brett Brown is not feeling too bad about this team either.
No, so we actually, this is another bite that we pulled for the game yesterday that he talked pregame. He is still pretty effusive about this team and where he's encouraged where they're at.
Go back to Vegas and what the marketplace thought.
I don't know what happened there. Let me reset that real quick.
Okay, all right.
Go back to Vegas and what the marketplace thought about us. We have exceeded everybody's expectation. The weight of, like, what we want to do with ourselves in locker rooms doesn't match what others think. We want more. And so I have been encouraged. We haven't played, I think it's, 40, 30% of the season without our starting players. And so that makes me even more encouraged. And we just, you know, I'm greedy. We want it all.
So I guess that is another element to it where it's not so much about managing exterior expectations, but more about what the team expected that they would be able to do and everything else. I don't know. In the NBA, seeding really does matter. I mean, Tyler talked about it, and we've talked about it at length, about the difference that a game here, and a game there can make between, you know, having a game seven on the road in a hostile environment and going to the Wells Fargo Center, where to this point in the season, the Sixers have only lost a single game. I mean, I don't know. Like, for me, I look at that, and I think that is, I get what you're saying, and that the expectations, you're kind of right on track. But you've also got to measure your success relative to what else is going on around the NBA, right? And at this point, things aren't shaking up brilliantly in the Eastern Conference yet for the Sixers. There's still a chance that that happens over the course of the next several months here. It's a long season. But you do have a lot of other teams that are big-time contending and stepping up in big-time ways. Like, I'm still not psyched about the idea of playing Boston in a playoff series. Certainly not if Boston is a higher seed than Philadelphia is. I mean, I feel better about Toronto. There are some other teams that I feel okay about. Milwaukee, I still like the matchup, but it's my faith is wavering by the week, considering the on-court performance that they're putting on with the attrition hits that they've taken from free agency, et cetera, et cetera. I don't know. The Sixers have to start pulling something together here pretty soon, not in terms of a wins and loss standpoint, but in terms of a confidence-building situation. It'd be nice if they looked just a little bit stronger than they've looked so far. Your phone number to join the conversation is 610-632-0975. Coming up, we've got a walk around the show in our final segment, plus we also have the often imitated, never duplicated, world famous One More Thing. All of that and more is coming your way next. It is the Joe Torti Show on 97.5 The Fanatic.
Joe Torti on 97.5 The Fanatic.
Hey, it is Joe Torti. Thousands of you have joined me and set up accounts to bet online with my guys at Parx Casino Sportsbook, the number one casino in all of Pennsylvania, the home team right here in the Delaware Valley. Let's talk about future bets. This is where you can bet on things like who will win the NFC and the AFC, who will have the most passing yards, most receiving yards, and rushing yards for the entire season. For the NFC, a $100 bet on San Fran to win the conference wins you $300. A $100 bet on New Orleans to win the NFC gets you $240. A $100 bet on the Birds to win the NFC wins $1,000. In the AFC, a $100 bet on Baltimore or Kansas City to win the conference wins you $450, or you can bet on most regular season passing yards. $100 bet on Carson Wentz wins $15,000. So many sports to bet, so much fun. Spreads, props, parlays, teasers. Download the app now or go to parxcasino.com/PA. Use promo code GREEN and get your first risk-free bet of $500. Your risk-free bet refunded as account credit. Bet with the best. Parx Casino and Sportsbook online or in person. Must be 21. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER.
97.5 The Fanatic.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Like most of us, Keith Urban also has a bucket list. You may be surprised to learn what is and is not on his. Text Keith to 45911 to read and learn more about the central theme of Keith's bucket list. Get a link to the story sent right to your phone when you text Keith to 45911. Go inside country music at BackstageCountry.com.
The Fanatic.
Welcome back, Joe Torti, 97.5 The Fanatic. This is a bonus One More Thing, because if you didn't hear it before, it's essential for you. And I've gotten people who've tweeted at me and let me know that this helped them. So Tyler, I'm sure that you've got gift wrapping to do. One of the things that we do as men is really be terrible at evaluating how much wrapping paper is required to cover a package. It is something that we consistently fail to do. You've probably tried to fold stuff around the package and seen that there's a, like an inch or two that you can't do. I have found online that if you turn the box sideways and leave the paper the way it is, turn the box sideways, it'll cover. Did you know this already?
I appreciate the effort. And two Christmases ago, because Christmas and Christmas wrapping, to me, are the two most, I guess they're the antithesis of each other.
Uh-huh.
Christmas wrapping is awful. Christmas is good.
Uh-huh, uh-huh.
So I made an executive decision 2 years ago, and I've told everybody outright, you're getting bags. It's going in a bag. I don't care. You're not getting anything wrapped.
You've bagged everything. So
everything gets bagged.
You steal the joy of unwrapping something from something, because tissue paper's lame.
And wrapping paper steals the joy out of my life.
Okay. All right.
Because I want to do it. I want to make it look nice. I'm very, very concerned about the appearance of it. And I know that tissue paper is lame. Wrapping paper looks really bad when you can't wrap presents.
Okay. All right. All right. Just checking. But that's the bonus One More Thing. That's not the actual One More Thing. All right. So we took a walk around the city. We started out, obviously, the Flyers with a big 6-1 win over the Buffalo Sabres at home. They've won back-to-back games. since getting the news and returning home that Oscar Lindblom was diagnosed with Ewing's sarcoma. Obviously, he got a warm, warm reception a couple of days ago at the Wells Fargo Center ahead of the game against the ahead of their game against the Anaheim Ducks. And then today, taking on the Buffalo Sabres, they led 6-0 after the second period. James Van Riemsdyk had a pair of goals. Carter Hart was really good as well. Carter Hutton, the other Carter in the game, was not. Then we flipped the script a little bit, went to the Eagles taking on the Dallas Cowboys. Got your reaction from that. Several people said that it's going to be a very close game. One caller in particular said that you could see a Dallas Cowboy blowout. Talked about Dak Prescott missing practice for the first time in his career. It seems as though he will not be practicing all week leading up to the game against the Philadelphia Eagles. Eagles win. There's still work for them to do. They've got to win or have a Dallas loss in order to win the NFC East. The Cowboys, in the event that they were able to beat the Eagles, they'll be punching their ticket to the playoffs and winning the NFC East overall. Touched on the Phillies briefly and the moves that they have made and not made. And then, of course, the Sixers conversation regarding where they stand in the Eastern Conference, what they've done relative to their expectations, which is to say probably play right about two expectations. The problem is the rest of the Eastern Conference has probably been a little bit better than we anticipated at the beginning of the season and into the preseason. That's just about how we got here. We talked about signing Gritty, too, to the Eagles and whether that was a good idea or not. And Tyler said, not to the people inside them, of course, but death to all mascots.
They can be inside. Great people on the inside. I hope they live long, prosperous lives. Yeah, the mascot itself, can let go.
Yeah,
it's time to move on from that. And, you know, here's a wild idea. Watch the game.
Hey, how about that? Speaking of wild ideas, here we go. It's time for the often imitated, never duplicated, the one, the only, one more thing.
But there is one more thing.
It's not Florida Man this time. Don't look now. Another state is stealing the spotlight. This time we head down to Georgia, where it's not the devil. It's a different piece of wildlife altogether. A Georgia family got a special holiday surprise last week after they found an owl hiding inside their Christmas tree. The discovery came last Thursday when Katie McBride Newman and her two children, India and Jack, were finishing dinner. India had started to clear the table, was in another room when Newman heard her say, "Oh my gosh." She comes very dramatically into the dining room and goes, "Mama, that ornament scared me." And then she bursts into tears. Newman says she's a big fan of owls, so the tree actually had about a dozen owl ornaments gracing its branches. You can't make this stuff up. At first, she thought that India had just been spooked by one of those, so she checked it out, getting ready to calm her daughter's fears. But when she looked into the tree for the ornament, she saw the owl turn its head and look at her. First of all, I'm out. Like, the only explanation is to move. That's the only thing that you can do after that. It's like finding a bug that you don't know what it is. The only explanation is that you need a new house.
It's the owl's house now.
It's the owl's house now. That's exactly right. Meanwhile, India has run away and is in tears again. The owl may have been in their tree for over a week. The family had purchased the tree from a store about 2 days after Thanksgiving. And the family left their windows and doors open that night, hoping the bird would leave on its own. Why? It's in a tree. Why would it leave? It obviously did not. Then they called the Chattahoochee Nature Center, nonprofit environmental center, about an hour away from their home. An employee there told them to leave the owl some raw chicken, concerned it may not have eaten in a few days. That was the first thing I thought. I was like, this owl's in the tree. What in the world's it been eating? The employee caught the bird. It's an eastern screech owl common in the Georgia area. Gave it food and nutritional supplements, checked it for injuries and stuff like that. The owl has been returned to the wild. Anything even close to that happened to you, Tyler?
No, nothing like that's happened to me. But the first thing that came to my mind is the squirrel from Christmas Vacation.
Uh-huh.
And my only thought process, again, you mentioned it, was what is this owl eating? And if owls could write books, there's going to be a tell-all one day about how this particular owl, survived on pine needles and tree water for 4 days.
I'm telling you, those are not things that are in the owl's diet. One time I did have a similar experience to this, still haven't figured it out. But like I said,
you're hiding in someone's tree?
It's the bird's house. I've since moved, came downstairs. heard rattling around. I literally came down with, I kid you not, a 5-iron. I'm like, someone broke into the house. It's time to take care of business. Hear him rattling around in the pantry of all places. Open up the door, and a freaking bird flies out of there. And I'm like, I have no idea how you got in here. It's your house now. I moved, and that's it. Actually happened. Some other things happened in between, you know, that and me moving, but pretty much.
Don't let facts get in the way of a good story.
Yeah, it's the bird's house now. That's pretty much it.
You actually sold it to the bird. They made settlement the next day.
Yeah, it was not a great deal for me. Not a great deal. Intimidation was a real factor at that table. Thanks to everybody who called and tweeted in. My co-host for the evening, really appreciated you guys teaming up with me to put on the show from 10 to midnight tonight. Thank you very much to Tyler Zuli. Outstanding job producing as always. Thank you for all of your hard work. I will be back on the airwaves on Saturday with This Week in Pro Football. Tyler, you'll be teaming up with me then. Are you you working tomorrow as well?
Yeah, I'll be here. I will actually be filling in for Natalie on Mike Mizzanelli's show.
Outstanding. We'll see you on the TV. Until that time, have a great night. We'll talk to you later. It's the Joe Torti Show right here on 97.5 The Fanatic.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Picking 5 of Carrie Underwood's best music videos was no easy task, but after some debate, we landed on 5 we believe rise to the top. Did Carrie's 2014 hit Something in the Water make our top 5? Find out when you text Carrie to 45911 and scroll through the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Carrie to 45911 to get your eyes on our favorite Carrie Underwood music videos.